What is up? What is up? It's your buddy, Todd. And I want to talk with you about physicians. And I've got a special love for physicians. And I know why. I was raised by my grandparents, married 62 years. Nana passed away while I was holding her hand on a Thursday. And uncontrollably, I sobbed in her doctor's arms. The next two nights, slept at my grandfather's foot of his bed at their retirement home. And my grandfather had a heart attack while I was keeping an eye on him. And within 48 hours, he was the next patient in the family. And uncontrollably, when he died, I broke down in another physician's arms. And these were my worst 48 hours of my entire life. And it's a physician's every day. When my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer, I saw it again and I went through it. Later on, as my marketing career took off and I became a special advisor to the White House chairman of the president's cancer panel for the last two White Houses, I saw it again. The work that these physicians do, the love and support that they pour into patients on a daily basis and their family members is admirable. And as such, I think we need to advocate for them at a larger level. And that's why today, right here, Dr. Jesse Ehrenfeld is with me, and he's an anesthesiologist and the former president of the American Medical Association, the AMA. He's renowned for his advocacy on patient well-being, health equality, and digital innovation. This podcast is brought to you by the Wirebuzz team. Now, if that name sounds familiar, it's because I've spent the past decade growing Wirebuzz into a digital marketing powerhouse designed to maximize clarity in complex sales processes so we can help accelerate revenue. And we do this in three phases. Phase one, we transform your website to function like your best salesperson and then also incorporate persuasive on-demand sales videos. Now your entire team is aligned on messaging and they're injecting massive clarity into your prospect's head. So your site looks great, but it also has engaging content that helps your team sell on demand 24/7. The next phase, phase two, we train your sales and marketing teams to sell remotely or in person to expand the impact of your sales team. And the third phase is we develop and run targeted ads to your prospects, scale those ads to help you achieve more business results. Sign up for the Wirebuzz Company newsletter to learn more about effective and simple ways to improve your company messaging, attract more digital attention, and ultimately make more sales. Dr. Jesse, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me, Todd. Looking forward to our talk today.
You know, I see it all the time. Like my wife jokes that like most of my friends are physicians, and she'll say like, dude, you've got to diversify your friend group just a little bit. But, every one of them's inspired by something in their background. What inspired you to become a physician and what guided you to want to serve people? Because I know from doing my research that desire to serve physicians like me is also very strong in your life. Where does that all come from?
Well, let me just tell you, I would say anecdotally, probably better be surrounded by a bunch of doctor friends than a bunch of lawyer friends, particularly if something goes wrong. But for me, look, my passion to pursue medicine was rooted in a desire to do something that could have an impact on the greater world around me. And early in my life, like high school, I remember where I was with my friends the moment that it like clicked that, you know, I went to a pretty nice prep school, had a lot of educational opportunities, a lot of people cheering me on. And I realized that I just had this obligation to do something with the opportunities that I had been given. And so, you know, I'd always been drawn to science and medicine. My dad's a dentist, although I knew I didn't ever want to be a dentist. My mom's a psychologist. That wasn't also for me, but I was drawn to medicine early in my life. And it's been an incredible opportunity to really touch the lives of so many individual patients when I'm seeing them in the operating room, getting them through surgery, helping them through what's often a very challenging moment. And then obviously at a greater level through policy work, doing things at a national scale.
It's a pretty cool journey that you've been on. When did you start to notice the unique challenges that our physician friends face? Like, for example, burnout, which is at the top of the list for them. What drove you to address these types of issues that really wear down a physician and their ability to serve and give from a deep place on a daily basis?
You know, I started in medical school. I still remember being a fourth year medical student on my internal medicine sub-internship, and I was working overnight with my team, with a resident, and one of our patients had a cardiac arrest, and we ran and we did everything we could, and the patient died. And I remember we all walked back to the workroom and went the next thing. And my senior resident who was leading us through all this, he stopped everybody and said, "Guys, isn't it so bizarre that a woman, somebody's grandmom, just died, and we are on to the next thing without pausing, without acknowledging, and more worried about, you know, what we're going to have at midnight, you know, as a snack to get us through the rest of the evening."
Yeah.
And I saw that frustration. I saw that tension around needing to just push through the night while acknowledging that there's this humanity that draws so many of us to the profession that often gets lost in the electronic health records, the virtual visits, the auto-generated emails using AI tools that are now responding for me to my patients. That's obviously very, very challenging and frustrating to so many of the profession.
Yeah, I see it. Like, I see the stats, all the time it pops up. It's 60% of physicians reported symptoms of burnout during the pandemic. Totally obvious why it was like Groundhog Day, but it kind of feels like physicians never really got back to life as normal after the pandemic. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time in my career creating content around caring for the caregiver, but I don't hear a lot about caring for the physician caregiver. And the highest level the AMA ever recorded, 60% of burnout, physicians burned out. And what do you believe are the key factors contributing to this trend and its like prolonged ability to stay in a physician's life?
Well, and unfortunately, it's administrative overload. It's, 2 hours of paperwork, EHR time, computer stuff, button clicking for every hour I'm in front of a patient. Nobody I know who's a physician went to medical school because they love clicking buttons on a computer. We went to medical school because we want to engage with patients. You add on to that the financial strain, workforce shortages. There's just not enough human capital, people, physicians, members of our healthcare teams to go around. You know, my mother-in-law, as we're recording this, is at urgent care. Why is it she is urgent care? Because she lost her third PCP in like the last 2 years, who converted to a concierge medicine practice that she can't afford to be a part of. The primary care system is imploding in front of us. So you add on top of that, just the stress of getting through your day when you're already pushed to perform. It's not surprising that the levels of burnout that we're seeing continue to be just extraordinarily high.
In the last, 30 days or so, I've had meetings with about 40 different physicians, little private one-on-ones. And the number one thing that I hear from them is that overwhelm, the burnout, the administrative paperwork that they've got to do. And then I also heard a subtle little message of fleeing towards some type of cash-based system so they don't have to deal with all of the insurance paper load. And as I thought about it, my grandfather was a therapist. He used to always tell me about the problems with insurance pay and how difficult it was for him. And now 50 years later or so, problems still persist. And I noticed when you were the president of the AMA, these were big topics that you were taking on. You emphasized that burnout is a systemic issue. What are the systemic changes that you think are critical in alleviating physician burnout that physicians in the audience should know about?
So there's so much that we can and need to do. I'm a big believer in innovation, digital health. My background's in, developing clinical decision support, AI tools, you know, funded by NIH and DoD. So I see the power of those things to be an asset, not a burden. Unfortunately, we've just gotten it wrong over and over and over. The, you know, nationwide deployment of electronic health records funded by your tax dollars was a disaster. You know, we had tech that just didn't meet the need. We were shoehorning workflows into bad software design, and that has left a lot of PTSD. So a lot of physicians, I think, they know the power of AI. They see the promise. We all see it, but people are nervous, and I think that's appropriate. But those tools we desperately need. If we're going to expand the capacity, if we're going to meet the needs of people like my mother-in-law so that she can actually have a primary care doctor, we're going to have to elevate the capacity of our existing teams, because even if we doubled medical school and nursing school and PA school enrollment today, you know, we wouldn't have the people that we need. We're going to be 120,000 physicians short in a decade, right? So we've got to be able to use tools to work more effectively, to reimagine the work and how these tasks are done. So we've got to do those things. We've got to streamline the administrative crap using physician-centered, smarter technology. We've got to change the reimbursement models. You know, primary care physicians get paid less today than they did my first year of medical school 21 years ago. It's shocking.
Wow.
That's a structural payment issue tied to Medicare, Medicare reimbursement, the physician fee schedule. We've just got to be compensating people fairly. We've got to put more dollars into preventive care. We have a sick care system, right? We pay for cardiac catheterizations, for surgeries. We don't pay for prevention. And unfortunately, that has just not been emphasized. The administration currently says that that is a priority. And certainly that may be a helpful thing. But there's so much that we know what to do. We just have to have the strength to do it.
It sounds like we've got a disease management system and not a health promoting system, and adjustments are needed there. And also, from my research, the AMA has supported causes around physician burnout. It feels like it's one of the biggest workplace challenges. Can you give us an idea what the AMA did under your tenure? And where do you think people like you who are now getting back out of the AMA and now you know, forging ahead on some of these important topics, where do you see the road ahead taking us?
So there's a lot that has been done. There's a lot more that we need to do. But a lot of the process reengineering is where this starts. You know, the problem's with the system, not the doctor. It's the system that the doctor is working in that causes the frustration, the loss of control, the irritation when you have...
It's management and use of the system that is faulty that creates...
Exactly.
...irritation and burnout.
Exactly. And so we've got to start at the system level to make it easier, to make it easy to get through your day, to restore the joy in the practice of medicine. And there are systems that are very effectively doing this. So one of the most important things that the AMA has done is created toolkits, say, okay, what is the best practice for, you know, medication management in a primary care setting? How do we make sure that we have all the pieces together and workflows that optimize what everybody can contribute so that we're leaning on our medical assistants and our PAs and our nurse practitioners and enabling the physician to provide value where they can at the highest level? The AMA took a lot of that learning from across the country and has bundled it into toolkits. They're freely available in their Steps Forward series. And then we started to recognize delivery systems, clinics, organizations through a joint medicine recognition program for following the roadmap and adhering to best practices. And more health systems have taken this on. They've recognized the value in doing what can be hard work to re-engineer deeply embedded processes. But at the end of the day, they make everybody's life better, including our patients.
Yeah, I think it's really like fascinating. So I'm kind of on the medical conference tour, probably like you, like, you know, badges from every acronym. And I've always noticed that these lectures are happening, you know, like I get into one of the rooms and the lecture's happening about work-life balance or about burnout or about how to, you know, optimize your staff. And I think maybe one of the biggest problems is actually not at the conference or the training, but the actual deployment and buy-in inside of individual practices around the country. Do you see where that kind of disconnect happens? Like, they can get excited. It's kind of like going to a Tony Robbins event. Like, I could get excited, but I also know that, like Tony would teach, you've got to now implement and deploy once you get back in front of the other people, or the momentum doesn't carry through.
Well, I think that's right. Although sometimes the problems of the conference, I just got to tell you a funny story. I was invited to be the wellness keynote speaker at a big national convention. I'm not going to say which one because I don't want to call anybody out specifically. But I'm not going to give the acronym. But I gave my talk, and it was very well received. I talked about joy in medicine and measurement and a lot of these tools and what can be done, what's happening. And then they asked me to be on a panel with some of the meeting attendees, which I was happy to do. I was their guest. This was not my specialty, different specialty. And a fight almost broke out. And a person got up to the microphone and he said, I don't get it. I don't know how anybody in this specialty could be burnt out. I love what I do. I have a great team. It's amazing. I can't believe I get paid this much to do this kind of work. This is fun. And they turned to the audience and he looked at the audience and said, how could any of you be burnt out? Well, what happened? A woman in the back row got up and marched to the microphone and said,
you bet.
I'm burnt out. I'm exhausted. I have patients who use anti-Semitic epithets. I have, you know, and she sort of listed all of the things that were so frustrating and wearing her down and led to the exhaustion, and you could hear it in her voice.
Yeah.
So that's an example where, you know, not everybody, you know, feels it. 60% of practicing physicians do. And yeah, you've got to take the best practices that you see online, that you hear at the conference, that you learn about at the meeting, and that hard work of implementation. Because the problem is, you know, most systems, you know, nobody's taken a week off, you know, to bring everybody together to figure this out. It's back to seeing patients, generating our views on Monday. And when your health system, your practice has a 2% margin, you understand why, unfortunately, those short-term, you know, revenue needs often push out the long-term investments that need to be made in the space.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So what advice can you give physicians who are in the audience listening, who are struggling with burnout or even considering any type of advocacy role to advocate for their colleagues that might be going through burnout? What advice do you have for them, Dr. Jesse?
So look, the first thing is you always got to take care of yourself. And if anybody out there is struggling, there are resources. There are confidential resources. They're often free resources. And I can certainly provide some folks things that you can point to online. So that's number one. Number two is this work can be done. And if you want a list of health systems that have figured it out, that are doing incredible work, go to the AMA's Joy and Recognition Medicine Program, and you can find the list of systems that have been recognized at three different levels, gold, silver, bronze, for actually engaging in this work. Again, a lot of this is not rocket science. It's not nuclear physics. It's not complicated. It's just taking the time, bringing together the stakeholders and saying, okay, we're committed. We need to fix this. We need to do it.
Okay. I love that. I think it's also, you know, important that physicians that are struggling not only get help, but realize, you know, I think physicians might be one of those people that are the last to ask for help because they, one, don't want to be seen as somebody who's got an emotional problem or is struggling. They want to feel like Superman, and going and getting help would also be an indicator of a weakness that could be used against them. I think it's like a celebrity. The last person that wants to go in and get help from a therapist is a physician or a celebrity, because it changes their whole, you know, the way people see them. And
not only that, it can threaten a physician's license.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there are still too many medical boards that if you check a box that you received any kind of therapy or psychiatric services, your license gets held up or you get called in before a board. There are too many health systems or practices that when you get privileges, when you apply to be credentialed, ask those kind of stigmatizing questions. And I have no problem with, you know, people asking about, you know, are you impaired? Do you have current impairment? Do you have, you know, specific needs that folks should be aware of? But when I graduated residency, one of my colleagues, different residency program, but same institution, you know, she went to apply for her medical license in a state that was not where we were in training together. And she had seen a therapist in high school and checked the box because she didn't want to lie that, you know, she had received counseling. Well, her license got held up 6 months. And people know that that occurs. And so what does it do? It disincentivizes raising your hand and saying, I need help. because people know that they're going to have to fill out those questions on those forms every time they get their license renewed, every time they get credentials at a facility.
You know, my wife got me help when I needed it, and how important it was for me, not just for our relationship, but for where I was really struggling, which was in relationships in the office and getting it, the business optimized the way I wanted. And what a relief it was when I finally got a safe place. I would encourage anybody, find a safe place where you can share what's going on and get yourself some help. And as I started thinking about our physicians, I came up with five of these workplace challenges. And I noticed that you are also on them. Lack of work-life balance. I hear this all the time, right? Like my physician friends would rather eat standing up than sitting because they're just moving so quickly throughout their day. Inadequate support and resources around them where they're carrying a significant brunt of the load on a daily basis. High patient volumes and long hours where the day never ends. Then there's the regulatory compliance and pressures and the administrative burdens. It seems like these are like the sediment that are like stacking on top of a physician that's wearing them down. Did I miss any?
Oh, while the federal government through Medicare is paying you less.
So you're running in quicksand.
That's a good analogy. And in spite of that, right, people still show up. They're so committed. They're so passionate. They care so much about the health of their patients, their community, that they're there. But unfortunately, we have the tragedy of too many lives lost to suicide, too many physicians choosing to leave, cut back, retire early. And none of those things should be happening.
Yeah, I also noticed that, because I've gone through a lot of these medical conferences, I noticed that the health of just the physical looking at them, health of physicians, at least at medical conferences that I've seen, they tend not to be taking the best care of themselves. And the first act of the heart is an act of loving self-kindness, where it pumps the blood that's depleted into the lungs and then back into the heart. It's the first act. And the more we can get physicians first act of every day, providing care and support to themselves, would be a world of difference. You agree with that?
Totally. Totally agree with that. 100%.
Yeah. Can you do me a favor? Paint a picture. Where are you going? Like a lot of people are wondering what's next for you. And after you, after your term at the AMA ended, I'm sure you've got your hands in a lot of things, but paint that picture for us.
Well, I was in the Navy for 10 years, deployed in Afghanistan, 2014, 2015. After that really challenging experience, very meaningful experience, I said, you know, I don't want to just publish papers to publish papers. I've published lots of papers, hundreds of papers, to sit on a shelf and not have any meaning. I want to be doing things. I want my life to matter and to have an impact on the world, which is what brought me to medicine.
Yeah.
And so that's what led me to my current role in Wisconsin, leading the Advancing a Healthier Wisconsin Endowment, a $550 million fund dedicated to supporting the health of the state. That's really what took me through my journey at the American Medical Association into leadership through the presidency. And for me, while I love putting on scrubs, going to the operating room, taking care of patients, I want to be doing things that have impact. And so whether that's in the policy space, the technology space, philanthropy space, I'm not sure what's ahead. You know, I'm still in my early 40s, so I've got a little bit of runway, hopefully, to think about where the career turns and winds take me.
Yep.
But that's sort of how I frame things.
That's cool. Well, you know what's great about it is passion drives you. The market often brings opportunities your way. And I've noticed in my life that whenever I don't really know where I'm going next, the universe intervenes and guides me. And I just wish you the very best. I know there's a lot of physicians out there, and it's a big task to be able to guide and advocate for our physicians, and something that I know you don't take lightly. I appreciate it tremendously. Last question, unless I come up with another one, Jesse, but, I want to ask you about anesthesiology. There's not a lot of kids growing up in America that are like, oh, when I get older, I want to be an anesthesiologist. Where did that come from?
You know, it was the one thing in medical school that I just loved. Did want to go home at the end of the day. I love being in the operating room. Did not want to be a surgeon. I did not love anatomy. but I love being in a fast-paced critical care environment where you have to think on your feet, make decisions, and you can see that the impact of those decisions matter. When I see a blood pressure that's 180 over 90, I don't write a prescription, click a button in the electronic health record. I literally open a drawer, pull out a syringe, administer to the patient myself, and I watch the blood pressure resolve. There is nothing better than that sort of immediate satisfaction when you're taking care of lives who are on the line when people are counting for. So for me, I love anesthesiology. It's been a wonderful field. And again, it's the easiest thing I do because I know what to do, and I always love working with residents and students too.
That's cool. So I've been fortunate enough to be inside of a lot of operating rooms, and it's always interesting, but I'm always checking out the anesthesiologists. I'm always watching the anesthesiologists screens and trying to figure out what's going on. And so thank you for the work that you do. You know, when I've been under anesthesiology, it's always been, like for most people, a very different and unique experience, but it's always great to have somebody riding shotgun with you in that. He's Jesse Ehrenfeld. He's an anesthesiologist. He's also the former president of the American Medical Association. Jesse, where can people go to learn more about you, to follow you and your next chapter and where this great road ahead is taking you?
Well, there's a lot of fake news out there on the web about me, but if you go to drjesse.com, that's my personal website, you can find most things that are true.
That's cool. And then is there anything that are you working on a book or anything, or what's
going on? I am working on a book. Hopefully it'll come out in the next year. We'll see if I can stick to my publisher's production deadline.
Yeah. Well, gosh, man, I took 4 years to write my first book. So I wish you well. It's not an easy task. And Jesse, thank you so much for joining us on the Toddcast. He's Jesse, Dr. Jesse Ehrenfeld. You can find out more at drjesse.com. Jesse, thank you so much for helping me advocate for our physicians out there.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it.
Yo, that was a powerful episode. And from what we just learned, it should be obvious how you can now implement these lessons in your life to get to the next level. Now, before you bounce, I just have three quick thoughts. First, thank you for taking me on your incredible life journey. Second, if you receive some value from me and you want to pay it forward, it would mean the world to me if you left an honest rating and review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. I'd be incredibly grateful. And lastly, if you share this episode, whether it be a screenshot or a photo from where you're listening, anything via Instagram stories or LinkedIn, Facebook, or any of the social media sites, just tag me and the guest. I'll repost your content and I'll reply back in the comments because I love mixing it up. In fact, I'd love to share your shout outs in my feed too. Not only are these shout outs really good for you and for me, but they also help us book more amazing guests because they'll be able to see the reach that you're helping to cultivate. This is a way for you to help contribute to the show. So thank you again for listening, and I look forward to earning a regular spot inside that ear of yours. Let's grow.